Welcome to the Strong Girl Podcast, a podcast for and about strong women and how they overcame the things that once made them feel weak. Join me, your host, Samantha Russo, as I discuss everything from mindset to physical health with guests that will surely inspire and motivate you. There will be laughs, there will be tears, and maybe a few F-bombs, but more importantly, lessons to learn to help you grow and embrace your strong girl. Welcome back to the Strong Girl Podcast. I am so excited for this next interview. This was something I briefly talked about on one of my Instagram stories, and it got a lot of feedback, but I'm certainly not the expert in the area, and it's all about money. And as, you know, a younger person thinking about our money mindset, but also thinking, you know, just about saving in general and the future, debt is something I really don't ever like to think about. So like I said, I'm not the expert. So I did find an expert. I am super excited to be interviewing Kelsa Dickey, and her passion for helping people with their money started when she was in middle school after witnessing her mother file bankruptcy. She saw firsthand the impact financial stress can have on a person, and her desire to change that led Kelsa to obtain a bachelor's in finance and a master's in accounting. Whew. She started Fiscal Fitness Phoenix back in 2008 and has been meeting with individuals, couples, and solopreneurs one-on-one for over 10 years. She brings a positive, practical, future focus to the stuffy topic of budgeting. Her approach is not like the typical budgeting method most people try to use and oftentimes end up quitting. Kelsa is on a mission to take the stress out of money. She's been the financial expert for various news and publications, including CNN Money, MSN Money, USA Today, The List, national TV news shows, U.S. News and World Report, Yahoo Finance, Fox 10 Phoenix, and Arizona Family Channel 3, plus many more. So yeah, she's super, super qualified. And thank you so, so much for joining me and for agreeing to be on a complete stranger's podcast.
You are welcome. Thank you for connecting with me, and thank you for making me sound so cool. Man, I want to meet that girl.
It's amazing. So I'm really interested. Growing up, was money something that you openly talked about? I've kind of found that money is kind of a taboo topic.
It's very taboo, but I think that there are subtle statements made that we all tend to pick up on. So, you know, I heard my dad, for example, talk about his income. He had a high school education, never went to college, and so at one point he was making pretty good money, and he would kind of, like, make comments about that, about, like, man, I can't believe that I never went to college and I can make this much money, and he would say the number. And so later down the road, like, I kind of, like, fixated on that number myself as far as, like, that's a good number. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then my mom, like, what I witnessed was more just the struggle. Like, I could see it. It was more like the nonverbal communication that I picked up from her. So, you know, we would go out to eat, and I could almost tell that she would be worried about, like, how is she going to make her car payment later in the month now because of this. It was almost like she wasn't present sometimes in those moments. And it wasn't because she said anything. It was, like, just the way I would watch her be. I would watch her just sit at the dining room table and, you know, with a stack of bills and a calculator and a legal pad and a pen and just, like, for an hour or two on end and just try to figure out, like, how can she get herself out of the situation she was in and not know how, you know? Mm-hmm. But it wasn't for lack of trying. She was a good, hardworking person. She had a good job, like, all of those things. She really just struggled with, how do I manage my money? Like, she really didn't know the tactical parts of it. And so I picked up from her, like, oh, this idea that, like, managing money is hard, right? Just by watching that. Like, oh, it's a struggle. Like, it's always meant to be a struggle, which is why now my passion is to teach the exact opposite, because I had to learn to overcome that. Like, it doesn't actually have to be that way, but that's what I grew up watching.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get started? I know in your bio, it said that, you know, kind of seeing your mother go through that, you were inspired, but were you always kind of drawn to numbers?
I was, yeah. And when I was a senior in high school, a college recruiter came to my school and said, what do you want to do when you're older? And I said, I want to help people with their money. That was my answer.
Wow.
And at the time, I really didn't know what that meant. And he said, you should become a financial advisor. So that's why I got a degree in finance. And then I practiced as a financial advisor for 3 years, but I didn't really enjoy it. It wasn't like the part of money that I really wanted to be helping with. Like my mom in that instance had a financial advisor. She had money that was like automatically going into her 401k and that kind of thing. But here she was struggling and couldn't touch that money. And like her financial advisor at the time, this was obviously a very long time ago, there are fee-based financial planners now that could help a bit more, but didn't really know how to help her with what she was struggling with, which was the day-to-day part of money. So I joke that I had like a quarter-life crisis and was like, hey, financial advising is not my thing. And I was young and I kind of went into it thinking it was going to be my dream job. And when it wasn't, that's when I went and got my master's in accounting. And I went into actually corporate accounting first and just started helping people very randomly. So I joke that I started because budgeting for a very long time has simply been a hobby of mine. So I would see somebody at the office and they'd be struggling or, you know, really stressed. And I'd say, hey, what's going on? And they'd say, oh, I just got into a fight with my husband this morning before we came about money, or I just don't know how we're going to pay our mortgage, or any number of things. And I'd say, why don't you come over after work and I'll see what I can do. And it really, that's how it started. And wow. I did that for years. And then it was when I started helping people who didn't know me, like a friend of a friend or a friend of a coworker, that I was kind of like, huh, I might be onto something.
Right.
There might be something to this from like a business standpoint. And actually 2 weeks from now, I'll be celebrating my 11th year anniversary of like doing this full time. So like
That's
leaving
amazing.
Corporate America and saying like, I'm going to actually make a life out of this. And that's how it got started, just kind of helping people. One lady would show up with like a candle and that's how she paid me. That's kind of how it started, is this very nonchalant sort of laid back sort of approach to just helping people.
That's awesome. And congratulations on 11 years. That's a huge accomplishment.
Thank you.
So can you talk about what exactly financial coaching is and how does it differ from, you know, financial advising? And does it have anything to do with, like, life coaching? I know that's a very popular kind of thing right now.
Yeah, that's such a good question. So financial coaching is a little bit of, like, the middle point between what, like, a bookkeeper or a CPA might do versus what a financial advisor might do. So I describe it as, like, a bookkeeper or an accountant is going to help you track what you've already done with your money, categorize it according to what the IRS says you can write off and put it in specific categories and that kind of thing. And they're going to sort of look behind you and keep your books. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
A financial advisor or financial planner is going to want to help you plan really far into the future and make sure you're ready for your future life. So maybe, you know, really far down the road, that sort of next chapter. And then a financial coach is the middle place. So I'm going to say, here's what you have in your checking account right now. What are we doing with it? What's the best place where we can put that? Do we save it? Do we spend it? Do we throw it towards debt? And if we throw it towards debt, exactly which debt do we throw it to? How do we get super organized? We focus a lot on, you know, value-based spending and getting really clear picture of like, where exactly is my money going now and where do I want it to go next week or next pay period or next month? So sort of like the short-term goals and ensuring that whatever goal you have, like we're putting your money today behind it. So whether that's paying off student loans or saving for a down payment on a house, getting out of debt, you know, and saving for a vacation. Like, that's actually some of my clients just have a goal of, like, cash flowing a vacation and saying, like, I just want to take a vacation and know that it's paid for and not come back and have to figure out how I'm paying for it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So,
and in regard to life coaching, really quickly, we tend to do a little bit of life coaching. So I've always said that money touches every aspect of our life. And so oftentimes what happens is we are talking about a person's fitness goals or health goals or, you know, do they want to organize their house or are they looking to do a career change or do they want to travel? And a lot of it will overlap because money is just one tool to achieve those other aspects of your life. And so it is a form of life coaching. So some financial coaches will call themselves a financial life coach. And I also know that some life coaches will touch on money, right?
Yes.
So they're not always universally like separate. a lot of the times we will touch on specific parts of it. And then some life coaches, you know, decide like they don't really want to do anything with money because maybe they don't feel comfortable with some of the, you know, ins and outs of it or the technical aspects of it. So, mm-hmm.
And there is kind of that, the two sides of it that I feel like is becoming, I don't know if it's like popular, or, but on social media, I would say in the entrepreneurial space, it's very popular to talk about, you know, money mindset, money blocks, and kind of what people would call like woo-woo, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of side of that aspect of money. But then there also really is the technical side of it, like the numbers of it.
Yes. And my approach tends to be a little unique. You know, a lot of our clients, I do joke that sort of like money mindset's like the buzzword right now.
Yeah.
So, and it's not a bad thing. I'm happy to hear that. Like, I want people talking more about money, and I want more people talking about money blocks. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. So, but as long as it's not just a buzz, that it's something that's going to stick, right, mm-hmm. for a while, and then we're actually going to dive into it. So here's my approach with when a client comes to me. The very first thing that we do is we get them on a plan with their money as far as like, so it's payday. What exactly are you doing with that money? And we're going to have that plan written out and thought through even before that paycheck comes. So how much is going to savings? What bills are getting paid? How much is going towards spending? Like, we're going to know all of that. And we're probably going to know it for like multiple pay periods coming up mm-hmm. so that we can see exactly what our plan is. And then the nice thing is that the client simply knows, here's what I have to do. Here's what my role is in this. And they help us create that plan. It's not like we do it and say, here, this is exactly how much you get in clothing. So we say, what are your goals? What do you want to be doing with your money? And then they feel so good about that plan that they can see it, that they implement it. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is we remove a lot of the chaos when we do that. So oftentimes people will come to us and they're just like, we don't know where our money is going, or we don't have a plan in place. We have no budget in mind or anything like that. And so simply by doing that, what we do is we give them that feeling of control pretty instantly. They're like, oh, okay, this is what I got to do. Okay, I can do that. Well, then what happens is we'll do that for a few pay periods, and then we begin to challenge it. And we get to say, okay, so now this is getting easy. Now how can we make it even better? So mm-hmm. how can we put even more money towards your goals and that sort of thing? Now, the cool part about this process is once we start to challenge the plan to improve it and strengthen it and grow, some mindset things will begin to happen. But the cool thing is that we get to address it like as it's happening
yeah.
versus, and we get to see like, how is this affecting your plan? And it becomes very tangible. So if we say like, okay, we're going to address this one piece of like negotiating a paycheck or like negotiating your salary with your boss or learning what it feels like to be sold to. So we'll give people challenges all around money that we'll say like, go do that this week, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And or let's call your student loans and negotiate some of those. Or any number of, like, challenges. And through those challenges, obstacles will arise. And some of them are, like, money blocks. The person's like, right. I just can't get myself to do it, mm-hmm. you know? And then when it happens, we get to talk about it. We get to actually figure out what's causing it. We don't do that at the front end because oftentimes what we have seen is clients come to us and they say things that aren't accurate about their money blocks. So I'll give you an example. A lot of people will come to us and say, I've tried everything and none of it has worked for me, and I'm just really bad at managing my money. That is a money block. That is a belief that they have around their money.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether that's true or accurate, or is that, have they really tried everything? Because we're just starting. So what we do is we put the plan in place, and once they start to implement that and they start to feel really confident of like, oh, I got this, well, we just proved that belief wrong.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Simply by making changes and executing things and like just putting the systems in place. And it actually builds confidence, and we get to address the money, the mindset, simply by either proving it wrong or sometimes validating it and saying, mm-hmm. yeah, and you know, this isn't going to work for you. This isn't a good system. So what else can we try? But again, trying to stay ahead of it and be proactive. Does that make sense?
Definitely. Yeah, it's building, you kept saying confidence, but also just like clarity around
mm-hmm.
around your money and also just talking about it. I feel like that is maybe one of my biggest things is if I don't talk about it, like I don't have to worry about it. And
I would say, yeah, like another good example along with that is like so many people come to us and they're like, oh, I have a spending problem, or oh, I spend too much on eating out, or oh, I know I could do better on X, Y, and Z. And they have like this category of an expense that they've like fixated on that they are doing poorly in. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we'll put them on a plan where it's like every pay period you get a certain amount, and let's talk about exactly how we're implementing this plan and exactly what you're doing. And then they go and do it beautifully, and then after a few pay periods, they're like, oh, I don't actually spend too much on eating out. Like, mm-hmm. I spend an appropriate amount, or I spend an amount that I can spend and still make progress towards my goals. So then what happens is it's not about that category. It's about a bigger picture with their money and how it's all connected.
I love it. So we touched on some money blocks, and I'm curious, have you experienced money blocks yourself? And if you did, how do you overcome that?
Yeah, such a good question. And I actually like people to know that I have experienced my own money blocks, because I think some people assume that as a financial coach that like I'm immune to them, first of all, or that if they've experienced them, they must be wrong in some way, or dumb, or like mm-hmm. bad with money, or any number of sort of that negative self-talk can creep in. And I believe that we all experience it in some fashion, every single one of us. None of us are immune to them. Some of them can be very subtle and have a very small impact, and some of them can be massive, but then in everything in between. But I believe that we all experience them. So mine, I actually just experienced a few years ago with a really big one. And, you know, my business, like I said, is almost 11 years old. Everything's been going great. I was about 8 years into my business, and we had launched some new programs, and they were going good, but there was this number, this revenue number that I could just not hit in my business. I just kept getting like so close, but month after month, I could not hit it. And I kept thinking like, why can't I hit this? What is going on with me? You know? And I had this revelation that I realized I had a daughter earlier that year. So my daughter was born earlier that year, and I had this belief that if you make too much money, your children will grow up spoiled and entitled.
Mm.
That they won't mm-hmm. be, you know, like giving kind people and understand like what a strong work ethic means, and you know, just any of those things is what I believed. But I didn't like go out and say those things. Like I didn't realize I believed that. Does that make sense?
Definitely.
But it sort of dawned on me, and here's kind of how I figured it out and then how I overcame it. So, the first thing is to kind of look at like, is there something causing this that is technical in nature? So, do I need to increase my prices? Do I need more clients? Is my marketing funnel correct? Like, you know, you could go through the business gamut of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the internal perspective, which is like, as a person, what am I believing that is holding me back right now? You know what I mean? Like, what is the belief that is leading me to self-sabotage right now? I have a list of 101 statements that are money beliefs, and you can go through and like score them 0 through 10. Like I either don't believe it at all or I believe it fully. And so sometimes when I'm feeling stuck by something, I will just go through and ask myself all of those, like say all of those and then score it. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, I got to this one and it didn't say, you know, if you're wealthy, your kids will grow up spoiled or anything like that. They're much more subtle statements, but I read it and I put a 10 down as if I believe that. And I was like, wow, that's it. That's the one thing that I need to focus on right now. Like, mm-hmm. why do I believe that? So then once you identify the actual thought, the idea or the belief, the question that I like to ask people is, which experiences in your life led you to believe that? And sometimes it's one really memorable moment that just stands out. It was super impactful. You know, maybe a kid on the bus said something to you at one time, right? And it has just stuck with you that entire time. Other times it can be something like a very slow, subtle build where we just heard something through the grapevine, but we've heard it a lot and it sort of has stuck with us. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
when I say ask yourself this, it's not always that, like, all of a sudden the answer just comes to you. So It's when I say ask yourself, it's like reflect on it. Just keep asking yourself, keep brainstorming, keep digging deep. It's not something that, like, I ask a client a question and they're all of a sudden like, oh, yeah, well, that one time. It's sometimes where, like, I ask a question, we talk through it, and then, like, a week later, they'll be, you know, driving in their car, and they'll be like, oh, my God, that'll just sort of, like, dawn on them. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I feel like I was introduced to, like, this whole concept that of money blocks and money mindset within the last year and a half, and when it was introduced to me, I was kind of resistant to it. Like that, you know, I don't really have control over, you know, the money. If you know, so I work a full-time desk job currently, and I do, you know, my side stuff. But it was kind of my belief, like, well, I don't have control over the money. Like, I love money. I want more of it. So, like, I don't have any money blocks. I just don't know why I'm not making more of it. Do you ever feel like people are resistant to the belief that there are money blocks from, you know, childhood or whatever, and we do have a money mindset that can really contribute to what we bring in?
Absolutely. I would say that money blocks, I think, affect income the most. So it's not often that it's not to say they don't ever, but they don't as often affect our spending. Sometimes they'll affect, like, if we spend to make ourselves feel better, maybe we spend because our parents always took us shopping on a bad day or something, that it might affect our spending in that way. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes where we are going to see the biggest financial impact is from the income standpoint.
Right.
Either you're a business owner and you don't feel like you can charge your value, or you, you know, don't feel like you can ask for a raise.
Yeah.
You feel like you're stuck at a dead-end job or a job that you really dislike because the income is as good as it gets for your field, right? Like, that's one of the other blocks that I hear all the time is, you know, clients are like, well, yeah, but for my industry, like, I'm making really good money, so I can't go anywhere else, You know, and that is definitely a money block. So what I like to do is pick, like, a neutral stance. So it's really hard to go from saying, in my case, children who are, you know, brought up in wealthy households, grow up spoiled and entitled, to children who are brought up in wealthy households are kind and loving and extremely generous. Like, those are two extremes, right? Mm-hmm. So for some people, it's really hard to go from one extreme to the other. You feel like either you're lacking integrity to that belief, or you just can't really buy into it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, you can't fake it.
Exactly. So what I like to recommend is, like, what's a neutral stance? Okay, so my neutral stance was my income will have no bearing on my child.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's not saying she's going to be fabulous because of my income or anything like that. It's just, it's very neutral. It's like, what if I just disconnected these two from each other entirely?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then if you can kind of just keep reiterating that to yourself, and find instances where that is the case. So then you start to look outside of you or look for examples that will reinforce that neutral stance.
Right.
Does that make sense? So
yes.
How many friends do I have where they are wildly generous, extremely kind, you know, give to charities, they have amazing work ethics, and they grew up wealthy, right? Like, mm-hmm. Or they grew up and they just have a normal middle-class household, you know, income kind of thing. Like, how can I find examples in around me where that is the case?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is then it starts to reinforce that belief, and then you can go from that belief to maybe the next step, which is, you know, money is a tool that allows you to be even more generous and more kind and have a stronger work ethic and do amazing things in our world, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can start to find examples of people who live that belief, so that you can reinforce it with examples.
Definitely. I think what I had started to have to do is just to, I think my first step was just recognizing it anytime it came up in my head. So some of the things that I would always catch myself saying is like, oh, well, it must be nice to have that car, or like, it must be nice to go on vacation all the time. And just kind of turning it around and noticing, like, oh, that, you know, that's a that's a block right there. Some other things that I would do, I had some other ones. The one that was, that really hit me when I first started to think about this was money is the root of all evil, or money doesn't grow on trees is one thing that I feel like everyone hears.
Money doesn't grow on trees.
And so always just kind of recognizing that. And I shared something on social media. My boyfriend and I, we have been wanting to go to Iceland for a very, very long time. And we finally, I know, we're so excited. But we finally just like bit the bullet. We got our plane tickets, and we've really planned it out financially. And I had asked people who had gone there for recommendations on food. And the overwhelming response was, Iceland is expensive. Iceland is expensive. It's expensive to eat out. It's expensive to do this. And I was like, wow, that's definitely something I would have also said and agreed with. But seeing it so many times, I was like, wait, but I was just asking for food recommendations. Like, I wasn't asking if it was expensive or like, or your perception of what is expensive or not, or, you know, it was just very interesting.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, like being expensive or what's cheap or expensive is a relative term, right? Mm. So the idea is that they believe that it's expensive, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you would go there and think it was expensive.
Right. It's very interesting.
I'll tell you, I observe other coaches or like financial coaches with a money block as well, similar to what you said. And I tend to sort of like call it out when I see it, just as from a industry respect sort of thing. Because I think we have to be careful. I think we need to lead by example. And that is when they make comments about somebody with a car payment or with, you know, somebody who takes a picture and posts it about a vacation, and they say something, you know, subtly or passive aggressively about like how they probably financed that, or they probably put that on a credit card, or and that to me, like assuming that whenever somebody has something nice or that they have maybe worked really hard for that, and immediately assuming that they have put that on debt is also a money block. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, and it's a really good sort of observation is like money blocks are judgy. Like they are. Like we're passing judgment, and we're either passing judgment on ourselves or sometimes we're passing judgment on others that we see. And so if you can kind of ask yourself, when do I feel like I pass judgment in regard to like a transaction or a financial situation, chances are there's a money block that's underlying there.
Yeah. It's very interesting once you kind of just become more aware of it. I like that you said that it was a judgy thing, because now when I think about other people and their money, I'm just like, that's none of your business. Like, none of your business. Don't even think about their money. Like, it's not your business.
Yep. And I'll try to even just assume, I give everybody the benefit of the doubt. So, you know, oftentimes we'll go, you know, out for drinks with clients or, you know, something, and it's, clients will joke all the time, like, Kelsa, this is budgeted, I promise. And I always say, I totally assume that it is. Like, I believe that you are good with your money and that you are making an excellent choice right now. Like, I do. I want to give you that. Like, why would I take that away from somebody?
Right.
You know what I mean? And the more I believe that they're not is, like, that's where I could get jaded, you know, or skeptical or cynical or that kind of thing. And that's not going to serve me well either.
Right.
You know? So I like to believe that all of my clients work really hard and they try to make good decisions and they try to do things right. They simply don't know what they don't know sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. And it is my job to help them, like you said, have more clarity and have more awareness and make better choices going forward that are more in alignment with what it is that their goals are, what they want to do with their money and their values and that kind of thing. But my initial inclination is to say, but they're trying so hard to do everything right. You know, they're working really hard for this money, because as soon as I believe anything different, then I feel like that's when I've always said this, as soon as I lose respect for my clients overall, and as soon as I, you know, don't give them the benefit of the doubt, that's when I will go back into corporate accounting. Like, if ever that moment happens, then that is a sign to me that maybe, like, that I have run my course. And luckily that has never happened. I feel like I still love the people that I work with and trust them fully and just know that it's my job to coach them even better, you know, because I feel like that's a sign. If we can't respect the people that we serve, then we're probably in the wrong line of work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there has to be so much trust that goes into this. So I do personal training and online fitness and nutrition. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's a lot of trust that goes into that as well. But I mean, I'm sure, you know, dealing with finances, there's a lot of that.
Yeah. I will say too, so when it comes to like the steps of my box, sometimes, you know, asking yourself, can I let go of this? Or can I give myself permission to let go of this? It's mm-hmm. amazing what simply that question can do for us. And oftentimes my job is to pose that question to the client. So will you allow yourself to let go of this? And it's amazing how just framing it in that way, and then they sort of will reflect on that question of like, will I let go of this? Like, yeah, this is actually a choice. Like, am I letting myself move on from this?
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And that question is a really powerful question. Like, is this an expectation I've placed on myself for too long and I'm now ready to let go of that expectation?
Yes.
And I joke this is something as simple as, like, you have the expectation, you know, this is just an example, like an analogy, but like that every time someone comes to your house, that your house must be clean and picked up and organized and like right out of like a magazine. And what if you just gave yourself permission to let go of that expectation?
Yep.
You know? And think about how different, you know, maybe your stress would be when somebody's coming over. Like, would you actually enjoy the company better or any number of things? So imagine if that same analogy worked for a money block that you have, you know? It can really open so many doors as far as, like, the possibilities of seeing other opportunities out there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you were saying too earlier about recognizing it and just trying to become more familiar with like how often you say it.
Mm-hmm.
The analogy I like to give there is it's like when you buy a car and all of a sudden then you start seeing that car everywhere right on the road. It is the same thing that once you become aware of the thought, it is easier to then recognize it every time you think it. So a lot of people are like, well, but how do you do that? And just trust that it will happen quite naturally, actually. You know what I mean? Same thing with seeing the car drive down the road and you're like, I swear there weren't any of these when I bought this, and now there's a million of them still living.
Yeah, absolutely. So I told a lot of my friends that I was interviewing a financial coach, and of course the number one kind of overarching topic was about student loan and student loan debt. So I'm just curious, do you work with clients that are dealing with student loan debt? And, you know, I guess what is some of the best advice for people in this generation that really do want to save and really do want to, you know, plan for a house, but just feel like they're so crippled by this debt?
Yeah, good question. Student loans are definitely like the next bubble. If you ask me, you know, credit cards were for a while and then the housing market. And now I feel like, you know, student loans are definitely the nut to crack for so many people.
Yeah.
And it can be really tough because there are so many scenarios that could play out, whether you've got direct or you have, you know, a public service loan. Do you have one that qualifies for forgiveness? Do you have a private student loan? Is it co-signed by somebody? There are so many different factors. So one of the things I like to tell somebody is allow yourself to go into research mode before you're in decision mode.
Mm.
So in other words, spend time, allow yourself the time, give yourself, like, I'm going to spend 30 minutes a day, like, reading about what the differences are or something along those lines. Of course, we could always also help somebody with that if they really didn't want to take the time to learn it. Like, we obviously can do that with them. Like, they could send us a breakdown of all their student loans and we can give them the here's your different options sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're going to do it themselves, just know that because it is sort of a conundrum, they're going to want to, like, dedicate some time to researching before they ever decide on anything, okay? And I always like people to know that those actions are very different. When you're in research mode versus decision mode, those are two very different sort of like approaches. So go into it with that mindset. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's kind of sad to say, but I feel like when you are taking out the loans, a lot of people, maybe this was just me, didn't really do a lot of research on it because college is kind of one of those things nowadays where it's just expected of you. Like, you, if you don't go, then, you know, what can you possibly do with your life is, you know, that's, I mean, that's another topic for another day. But
yeah, I completely agree as far as, like, it was so easy, right? Like, yeah. I feel like you're sitting in front of the financial aid office, there's this financial person, and you think that, like, you're at an age where I think we were all a little naive, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I just think it's a natural thing at that age to be very trusting, idealistic, that sort of thing. And so we believe this person has our best interests in mind, and so it's so easy to just sign and say, oh, I can start, and I'm going to get a refund check for anything I don't spend. And then how many people, I know I was one of them, like, I lived off those refund checks, yep. Right?
Paid for my rent.
And yeah, exactly. And there just simply wasn't enough advocacy at that time of, like, here's the impact that this is going to have, here's some of the different strategies you can use, and here's how to be smart with this money, right? And I really wish that there was. And because of that, just even hearing you talk, one thing to recognize in this journey with student loans is how much shame are you holding because of that time of your life, as far as, am I really beating myself up for not asking more questions, for not being more aware or educating myself, and am I kicking myself? And the reason I say shame is because one of the natural inclinations when somebody feels shame is avoidance.
Yes.
Okay, we just want to brush it under the rug. That's very natural. When we feel shame, what we do is we then don't talk about it at all. It's like it's out of sight, out of mind. We don't even want to think about it. But of course, we think about it when we're laying in bed at night. Mm-hmm. It gives us a stomach ache, that pit, right? And we just like, oh, God, I'm just going to roll over and pretend like I'm not even thinking about my student loans right now, right?
Yes.
So we have to recognize that, because that tells me our very natural sort of inclination will be to not pay it, or to not, like, address this head on, not do research, not believe that we can learn now or that we can advocate for ourselves today, mm-hmm. right? Like, if anything, we're going to have to fight against the tendency to just brush it under the rug and avoid it entirely because of that shame.
Yeah. Oof.
Okay.
That hit me.
Deep, right?
Yep.
So here's my thing is, at the time, knowing what you knew at that moment, you made the right choice for you at that moment, right? Like, you don't know what you know, you didn't know at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't beat yourself up at that time for not knowing what you know now, okay? And we have to know that, like, but I can be trusted to do something about it today, right? So yeah. I am going to fight that inclination of what I did wrong before was not advocate for myself. So I am going to learn from that and today advocate even more so today and, like, overcome that and prove to myself that that's not me. That is not the norm. Who I am today is somebody who is curious about money and curious about student loans and what else can I learn? And I'm going to become engaged in my own journey,
mm-hmm.
right? It's funny because we almost have to overcompensate a little bit for that period because we, so many millennials, like, beat themselves up for that period of their, you know, decision-making life. And it's unfortunate because we were surrounded by people who led us down that path, I believe,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I think one of the questions when it comes to, like, the technical aspect of student loans is, what is my ultimate goal with the loan? So what I mean by that is, am I trying to pay off the loans as quickly as possible? So I want to get on an aggressive payment plan. I'm going to, you know, maybe hold off some of my other goals that I have, buying a house, whatever the case may be. And I want to get out of this as quickly as possible. If that is the case, then what you choose, whether it's refinancing, the type of payment plan you choose, consolidation, any number of things, may be very different than if you choose the other strategy, which may be, I am going to hang on to this for as long as possible, but do one of the, you know, the payment plans where whatever is left after X amount of years gets forgiven, okay? Which is very different than that first approach, which is like, I just want to get this out of my life as quickly as possible. The other one is, I want to pay as little as possible over the next 20 or 25 years, but it's going to be around for that length of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do one of, like, the you know, income driven repayment options. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think, and a lot of that will come down to two things. One is cash flow and sort of like current financial position. So like, if you can aggressively pay extra to it and really get out of it quickly, you know, imagine how that might feel. And while, yes, you're going to maybe pay the entire balance and that seems humongous and all of that, like, let's play out that timeline and see, well, how long would that take? How much would we need per month? Like, exactly what does that look like? And then the other factor you want to look at is, which way excites me the most? Which one will keep me fired up? Which one will keep me super excited? So the reason that's important is because when it comes to financial coaching, it's both analytical and mathematical, but it's also very emotional and behavioral. And what I mean by that is, like, the numbers may tell us one thing, but there's no equation. I've never found one that has, like, motivation or excitement from a client as like part of the calculation.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, absolutely.
And I believe that, like, it, no matter what the numbers tell us, if a client is bought into that strategy versus a client who feels like they just, it's the right thing to do, but they don't really care to do it, a client who is motivated by something will achieve it so much faster than the numbers even show anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it'll end up being even better. So excitement is like that nth degree, right? Like, it's the thing that exponentially makes something happen faster. So let's play out the two different scenarios. In one option, we aggressively pay extra to it, everything extra, even if that feels like it's maybe a few years or 5 years or something, but like, man, in that time, they're gone, and that feels exciting to somebody, right?
Yeah.
For some people, they're like, I'm going to do that. I can handle that. Like, it's going to be tough. It's going to be hard, but that's the path. I can get on board with that. Another person might say, all right, I'm going to do the 25-year repay option. It'll be, the balance will be waived for 25 years. So for the next 25 years, that's going to be my payment amount. But during that time, I'm going to be able to hit this goal and save for this amount, or I'm going to be able to hit this next goal. And while that's, it might be slower to hit those goals because now I have this student loan payment, I can feel excited about those goals.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Where maybe that person can't get excited about the fact of like 5 years paying off their student loans and not doing like buying a house or something.
Absolutely. I think that's actually really super refreshing to hear, because it feels like there is kind of only one option, or there's really only one option that's really talked about, is like, pay it off as fast as you can so that you can just move on with your life. but it's nice. It makes so much sense that you have to really buy in to whatever one you're going to go for. And it's also, I got a lot of questions that really related to having the goal of purchasing a house, but having these student loans. And it just sounds like it, you know, it's not a one or the other type of thing.
Right. So we like to kind of like play out both scenarios as far as like, okay, here's what my budget would look like if I did it this way. And here's what my budget would look like if I did it this way. And here's how much of a house I could afford if I kept the student loan payment during the entire time. Here's, I might have to wait 5 years to pay off the student loan, so then maybe 6 years to buy a house. But here's the type of house I could afford at that time without a student loan payment.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And we like to look at all of those factors and then say to the client, which one feels best to you?
Mm-hmm.
Which one is something that you can get excited about? Because that, like, it's not my life, right? Like,
right.
I'm not going to be the one buying the house and living in the house and choosing whether, like, how much they go out to eat or whether they pick up cabs for friends or any of those things. But my job is to paint a very clear picture around what is it that you're choosing, right? Because oftentimes the impact isn't simply, am I paying them off quickly or am I taking the time and having it for a while but being able to do other things? Like, I want it to be so crystal clear as far as, like, what does that mean cash flow-wise? What do the other categories of your expenses look like? How much could you spend in other things? Like, get crystal clear on what the impact is, because it's the impact of that decision that will likely ultimately make the decision for you.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. So, kind of along these lines, I know, you know, a lot of people in my generation do really want to save, but with the loans, they feel like maybe they can't save. I'm curious. Mm-hmm. I recently downloaded one of those apps that helps you save and kind of helps you take a look at, you know, you're spending this percentage on this and this percentage on this. Mm-hmm. Really just kind of starting to dip my toes into it because I realize that I need to know where my money is going, what's coming in. I know I need to be more clear about it, and I can't avoid it for my entire life. Do you find validity in some of the new tech things that are coming out, the different apps for financial budgeting, planning, saving?
Okay, so let me clarify quickly about a couple of things. So I will say that I don't love tracking where your money's going. I feel like what happens with a lot of the tracking apps out there, as far as like it downloads my transactions, I get to categorize them, and it tells me how much I've spent on certain things. I feel like the value there is very short-lived. Mm-hmm. So it will help you if you really have like no idea where your money is going, then maybe you do it for like 3 months or 2 months and it kind of tells you, well, are you spending $100 on eating out or $1,000? Like it'll at least give you some ballpark, right? Mm-hmm. But then, and I feel like that's about the extent of the value, because what starts to happen after that is it's simply all too reactionary. So you update it once a month or every couple of weeks and you find that you went over on eating out. Well, you can't do anything about it at that point. It's too late. And so what happens is I find that all they're doing is making people feel even worse about their money. Mm. Okay, so it's like, well, now I went over and now I feel guilty about it, but I can't actually make a different decision tomorrow than what I did last week because it was last week that put me over.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
The other thing is, at that point, you are spending the time to track your expenses and go in there and categorize things and all of that. And so what's happening is people are saying, well, I spend time managing my money, but the value isn't there. So then they just get frustrated with themselves. Mm-hmm. But they're saying, but I'm actually working hard at this. It's simply not hard work that's actually paying off or giving them any sense of control.
Got it.
Okay, so here's what I typically will recommend instead of something like that, which we can talk about some of the other apps that I do like, but is we put expenses into three buckets, if you will. There's the fixed and recurring. Those are all the things that are like bills. They have due dates. They happen every single month. Pretty straightforward. This is usually the least stressful of the three categories of expenses. So most people sort of like know what their rent is or know, you know, what their cell phone bill is and that kind of thing. So my recommendation for those, though, if a person's listening and they don't already have something in place, is make a list of what all your bills are, the dollar amount, and the due date, but put it in due date order. Okay, so a lot of people, if they have a list of their expenses, it's like rent or mortgage first, and then car payment, and then student loan, and it's almost like they go by dollar amount or level of significance in their mind. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Where I want it to be in due date order, because most people get paid on sort of like an every other Friday, every other Thursday sort of cycle. So your pay dates are continuously changing. So, you know, 1 month you might get paid on like the 7th and the 21st, and then the next it's the 10th and the 24th. And what I want you to do is always know, like, okay, today's the 10th. Here's the 5 bills I need to pay. And because my list is in due date order, it's nice and easy. I just pay them on payday, and I know for 2 whole weeks I have nothing else to do.
Right.
Okay, so super simple. The next category is the day-to-day spending. So this is everything that happens within a month, but there's no due date, and it tends to be somewhat random. So groceries, mm-hmm. eating out, buying a bag of dog food, or whatever the case may be, right? So picking up dry cleaning if they have dry cleaning. So my recommendation there is we want to figure out how much does a person spend typically every 2 weeks if they get paid every 2 weeks. So, and I always hesitate to use dollar amounts because everyone's different. But let's say it's like $300 a pay period. Okay, so the idea is on pay period, you just lump it all together and you say, for this whole pay period, I'm going to give myself $300 to spend. And then the client has two options. They can either take that out in cash, and I don't believe in the envelope system as far as like how much do you have for eating out versus groceries versus dry cleaning. Like, just give yourself $300 to spend, and as long as you're spending your cash, like, you're good. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Or transfer it to a separate checking account that you use your debit card for, but that's like your spending account. And the idea is it still makes it visual. So you've got 3 days left till payday and you've got $100 in there, like you're good. So the idea is to actually separate it from your main checking account though, so that you always know how much do I have left until I get to replenish it.
Gotcha.
Which is the goal with the cash, but you can do it in just a separate checking account too.
That makes sense. Yeah.
That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now what happens is we've got payday happens. We know exactly what bills need to clear for that pay period because they're nice in due date order. And then we take out our cash or we transfer to our spending account. And now if you think about it, what happens during payday that you're not aware of at that point?
Nothing.
Like, you've got all your spending money. You know exactly what bills need to clear. So there's, like, nothing else that needs to happen.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's literally like now we've just put it nice in a routine. Like, it's everything is just nice and consistent now. And then the next thing that we do is the third category of expenses, which we call the whammies. These are the non-recurring or random expenses.
Mm.
So these are things like clothing or buying gifts or vacations or car repairs, things that don't happen every month, but when they happen, they tend to happen big.
Right.
Right?
Mm.
So and there are some apps that do this, but really my favorite is just ally.com, ally.com. It's actually an online bank.
Mm-hmm.
They allow you to open as many savings accounts as you want. There is no minimum balance requirement at all, and there's never a fee.
Huh.
So you don't even need to leave a dollar in the account, and they don't care.
Hmm.
Okay, and you can title each one whatever you want. So you're going to have a clothing fund, and a gift fund, and a travel fund, and a car maintenance fund, and like any annual bills you have would also go into this account or into this category. And then once a month, you figure out like how much do I need per month on average for that. So like how much every month do I think I spend on clothing? And this is where it's a little bit of guesswork at first, and I'm totally fine with that. So I think we could go through like 12 months of data and like go through bank accounts and categorize things and highlight them with, you know, print all the statements and highlight them with markers and all of that. Or we can simply guess and know that we can totally change it at any time if we need to. Like, it's really not that big of a deal, right? So the idea is, let's say we're like, all right, I want $100 a month. So I'm going to put $100 into my clothing fund. Well, when it comes time to go buy clothes, the nice thing is that this now impacts your future decisions, not just behind you, but you want to go buy clothes and you're like, how much is in my clothing fund to spend? Here's how much I have. I can go spend this much. So then it essentially gives you permission to spend on clothing for that amount because you know you put it away for that purpose.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Definitely.
And what happens is, like, you simply transfer back to your checking account, spend it, and it's like it never even happened.
Yeah.
The same thing for, like, all of the categories.
I love that because...
like, car repairs and...
it gets rid of any guilt around certain things. You know, I know for me, I have guilt around buying clothes, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, that would be super helpful.
Right, like, we have guilt around buying clothes, but, like, we have bras that like have underwear sticking out of them, and like we're like, we should not feel bad buying bras for ourselves, right?
Yes.
Like, that's the thing, is like so many people will come in and they'll say, but I swear I don't spend that much on clothes. And what they're doing is they're like justifying or defending, right?
Right.
And we shouldn't have to feel like we need to do that. So my thing is, like, let's say we're putting $100 aside into the clothing fund and we find that we keep like wiping it out all the time. Well, guess what? Maybe we start doing $150 then, right? Like, no big deal. Let's just change it. Like, what we tried is simply the baseline, and we can adjust up or down based on what actually happens. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But typically what will happen is we don't have to do a lot of adjusting, because what a person has been spending when they don't have a plan in place isn't really a good representation of what they want to be doing with their money in the future anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say, like, okay, I'm going to give myself $75 a month because I really have these other goals. I want to save for a house, or I want a new bedroom set, right? Or whatever it is. Like, I'd rather just do $75. That $75 will feel so much more liberating to you. And like you said, more freeing and less guilty versus even if you had spent double.
Yeah.
So the cool thing is, by even just doing those simple changes, we have essentially taken the roller coaster ride out of a lot of things. So mm-hmm. we've got all your bills, which are pretty set anyway. We've got our spending money, which, you know, some pay periods will spend more, but some pay periods will spend less. So as long as we're spending within the spending account, like, it just keeps replenishing itself. And so that doesn't really matter. So it's the same amount every pay period. And then every month we save in those individual buckets. And so even if we have a month where we have to pay a $500 car repair bill, if we have the money in there, then we don't actually feel a $500 hit.
Right.
Right? So mm-hmm. we've taken the chaos out. And that's what I was saying. Like, we take the chaos out usually within just the first few pay periods. Like, that's literally, that part's all done. We get it all set up. We know the numbers. We get it done and finished, like, really, really quickly. And then what we do is we get to say, so now here's how much extra we have. What do we want to do with it? What kind of goals do you have for your life? Let's figure out which order works best for you and which strategy works best for you so that you can get excited about it. And because we know that we've got car repairs covered and we've got some of, like, the basic necessities covered, that money that is extra, it's truly extra. And we feel more confident saying, I'm going to just pay extra to my student loan this month.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Because we know that we're not going to regret it later, or like a month later be like, oh, no, this has come up and I can't do it because I paid off that extra towards my student loan. And then we, like, kind of regret it, mm-hmm. you know, like, we don't want to feel that way. So, yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. This has been, like, really, really eye-opening. And I just think so many people, in this millennial age bracket, will benefit so much from just talking about it and hearing these really, it's not even overly complicated, which I think is something I super appreciate. So can you let the listeners know how they can find you and how they can connect with you?
Yes, of course. So our website is fiscalfitnessphx.com. We're also on Facebook. We have a podcast, which you can find from any of those places. We always share the episodes and things, but it's called Perfect. Overcoming Financial Stress with the Saver and the Spender. And it's my husband and I, we talk about kind of how we make money work, given that I'm a saver and he's a spender. So we, talk about some of the fun things we do and how we really balance each other out and how that's a beautiful thing and about how we're both needed. And, you know, we kind of joke that spenders always wish that they were more, you know, better at saving. And I feel like a lot of savers are always like, oh, I wish I could just let loose a little bit. And I wish I could spend a little bit more freely. And so we're always, like, envious of that other counterpart. So, like, how can you balance your own normal, you know, personality with that of the other person, sort of thing, even if you don't have that other person that you're married to, sort of thing. So how can you, like, bring that into your life? So we talk about that. We do a Eureka session, which is like a one-time session. So for a person who's like digging this and they're like, I want to know exactly what I should do with my student loans or how much I should put into my clothing bucket and all of that, the one-time session, like, they literally walk away with that entire plan. Like, they know all their numbers. They know exactly what they should do. And then it just becomes down to, like, implementing it. And then some people obviously want help executing it afterwards, but other people are like, yeah, this is just, I just needed to know the plan. You know, I just needed to know what I wanted to do. I'm sure you find that, you know, some people, you give them a workout plan and they're like literally at the gym every day. They do everything right. And then other people are like, I need some accountability, you know? So that we offer that. We're on Facebook, I think is, we like to do Ask Me Anything. So if people have questions, they can reach out to us and then we'll do a live video where we answer questions. So that might be a good way for people to get some advice or guidance around what they have going on as well.
Oh, that's so awesome. That's such a great, great resource and really just like demystifying and taking any, you know, stress and anxiety out of it, I think, is so huge.
Yeah, like you said, sort of like demystifying it. So there's so many times where a person will come in, they'll say, well, I heard about this, and I'll just, it's so easy for me to be like, oh, yeah, yeah, don't even worry about that. That's not, I have anything you need to worry about. Like, that either doesn't apply to you for some reason, or it's irrelevant, or, but it's, there's so much information out there. There's, it's almost too, too much personal finance information out there. So, you know, people can very easily go down the rabbit hole and then get distracted. So sometimes our job is just be like, oh, yeah, don't even think about that. Like, yes. Just ignore that idea.
Distracted and discouraged, too. I feel like, mm-hmm. and I think it's so great that it's fiscal fitness, because it really does remind me of there's so much health and fitness information that people get so overwhelmed and then they brush it under the rug, just like people do with, mm-hmm. you know, their money. So I love the name of that. Thank you so much for joining me. I am super excited for everyone to hear this, and I hope people reach out to you, because I know I got a ton of questions and I was like, I'm not the person for this. I'm definitely not the person for this. So that's why I knew I had to find you.
We would love it. We love what we do. So thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And if you guys get any more questions, we'd love to, you know, answer those on another podcast episode too.
Absolutely. Thank you so, so much for listening to another episode of the Strong Girl Podcast. And thank you to my guest, Kelsa Dickey. That was such an awesome and real conversation about money mindset. And it wasn't, you know, I had some people commenting when I had mentioned that she does work with clients on money mindset and money blocks, commenting about, you know, just saying silly things that really showed me that they don't actually understand what money mindset is, or they're maybe not willing to admit that we all have money blocks and that we all grow up having certain beliefs about money, like kind of what we talked about. You know, money doesn't grow on trees, money's the root of all evil. And I could totally relate when she was talking about that money block that she had with her daughter. I remember even in elementary school, knowing who the rich kids were and thinking that they were snobs or mean or popular or, you know, stuck up, bratty. So I could totally relate to that. And I think that we all need to just realize that we do have certain feelings about money that could be blocking us from, you know, from acquiring more, or the way that we budget, and realizing that there are two sides. So there is really that number side, that cold hard facts, and then there's also the emotional side of it. So if you found value in this podcast, I would so appreciate it if you shared it all over social media. Feel free to share it on your Instagram stories and tag me at Samantha L. Russo. Thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned next week for another episode of the Strong Girl Podcast.